Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS. Wow, that's like super radio voice right there. Your journey through space and time lords, where five companions this week take a journey talking about Doctor Who, the latest news, latest episodes, and the latest everything else, I guess. I am Dolly Domofsky. I butcher that intro every single week. I try something new and it never works. One of these days I'll get it. Joining me as usual, Sean Norton.
Hello.
You've now been on the majority of the – you're over the 50% mark now, I think.
Yeah, well, sure.
Steven Strum.
Hi there.
Marcus Beer.
Boy, thanks, Chip. I'll take crappy radio introductions for 500, please.
I'm in that game show mood that this week's episode was all about. And for the very first time, Monsieur Ben Padden.
Good morning, Gallifrey.
Love it. You got fantastic pipes, Ben, I got to say.
Thank you. My tits are quite nice, too.
Dolly, what do you want to
do? You realize the awesome quotient on this podcast has just gone up. I mean, you know, I was holding it all by myself, but now Ben's here. Even though he's English, we won't hold it against him. But, I mean, you know, we really sort of like just, you know, giving you colonials such a bump.
We're getting there. Eventually, we will just overrun the podcast. It will just be Europeans. Just talking about Doctor Who.
We don't do Europeans. It's British only.
On the very next episode of The Lonely TARDIS, there's just one less American host, and then like slowly week to week, they just disappear.
Yeah, we're all talking. Like, where did he go? Like, I haven't heard from Dolly in weeks now. He's just vanished, and then eventually.
I'm more European than the other. I'm more European than the other dudes on the.
You're trying to establish your credentials now, so we don't just murder you.
Exactly, okay. So you don't murder That's me fine. Later on.
Didn't we go through this a couple of weeks ago with Steven and his Norwegian penis?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This podcast is off to a stunning start, and I'm really happy. It's great to have you on, Ben. I'm glad you could be the tiebreaker this week in case there's a fight like we had last week, which was
a
spirited debate. Spirited debate, we'll call it.
First to feel valued.
Definitely. If we only brought you in to be a tie-breaking vote, then you can get out.
Yeah, it's an odd number now, so, you know, it's perfect.
Gosh, I wonder how this pendulum will fall.
Well, this week we're definitely going to talk about the Zygon inversion, which was episode 8 of series 9 of Doctor Who. There's a lot of news to cover and a little bit more of the big finish audio play that we've been reading or listening to, Doom Coalition. We'll dive right into the news. Big thing this week, and there were a lot of versions of this story that kind of bounced around, but it looks like Stephen Moffat can confirm. I'm reading from the Radio Times right now. Stephen Moffat can confirm absolutely that there will be a full series of Doctor Who next year. So there were a lot of stories, like I said, that were bouncing around. The Mirror had something. I think even The Guardian had something. Gawker probably had something. I don't know. But there was there was talk that maybe it would only be a shortened season or just a few specials throughout the year. Would Capaldi be coming back? We can thankfully say now that Series 10 will be a full run of episodes.
Yeah.
That's marvelous. In fact, there are two stories that I read to this point. There was one where Peter Capaldi had specifically said that he'd been contracted for 12 episodes plus the Christmas special, which would be 13. And I'd also read that Stephen Moffat had said that he's definitely going to be producing at least 12 plus the Christmas special, and that he was actually pushing for more episodes. So if Moffat gets his way, we could actually have a couple of extra episodes next year. Yeah, so I mean, I know that traditionally, up until last year, we were getting 13 a year plus the Christmas special, and obviously, season 7 was a bit of an exception to that. Well, because we got two Christmas specials, and then the anniversary, and then Matt Smith's swan song. But yeah, it sounds like Moffat wants to do more than just the basic 12. But the interesting thing is, and I don't want to dominate the conversation, but I'm going to anyway.
I'll just sort of do it.
A lot of people are speculating that. Moffat has said they're doing a full season next year. Capaldi has said that they're making a full season next year. But Moffat has specifically said that he's not in charge of when the show is broadcast, when it's airing, what time of the day or the evening or night that it airs. That's something that he doesn't have any say in. So some people are reading between the lines and saying that even though they're making a full season, they wouldn't be surprised if it started airing in 2015 and then finished like in, say, January or February of 2016. So we would get a full season, but it would kind of lop over the end of the year, kind of like the classic series used to do during the 70s.
And we did have something happen like that.
Sorry, Stephen. Taps into something I was, I've been kicking around the idea in my head that the reason he wants the extra episodes is next season will probably be Capaldi's last. So maybe we will see a Christmas special and then a New Year regeneration.
That could be interesting. I could be down for that.
We did when Tennant was leaving, where he had the specials, but then the was the End of Time or whatever it spread out across two episodes. The other thing that Capaldi and Moffat have both come out and been quite vociferous about over the past couple of weeks is the scheduling by the BBC of putting Doctor Who on much later in the night, and they're not happy with that.
Hmm.
It's the views, the numbers for the last episode, not last week's, the week before's, were something like 3.8 million, but they're up against an ITV juggernaut apparently, and they're just pushing it later in the night to accommodate things like the Great British Bake Off and shit like that. Ugh. Which means people, especially Brits, and Ben will attest to this, what do Brits do on a Saturday night? Well, we go and get shit-faced.
Exactly. So we're not watching Doctor Who. We're not watching it. No one's doing it. I mean, the show did really well in the ratings when Russell T Davies was the exec producer, and he and oh my god, I'm totally blanking on her name, who also produced with him at the time, and I forget her name.
Julie Gardner.
They actively fought to keep the show at 7 o'clock because the BBC constantly wanted to move it back, and they would fight to keep it at that 7 o'clock time period, time slot. Now, my thinking is that Brian Minchin and Stephen Moffat maybe aren't fighting for that as voraciously. Like maybe they've acquiesced a little bit, where Russell and Julie would have been a bit more tenacious in fighting for that time slot, and consequently it slipped back and back, and that's obviously had a knock-on effect on the ratings. Hopefully, if we're lucky, it will be back in a more sensible time slot for season 10. But obviously, that's not anything that we're going to have any inkling of or any real idea of until next year's season rolls along. Hopefully, the crappy ratings for this year will give the BBC kind of a kick in the backside and give them the impetus to kind of pull the show back to a better hour.
It is doing really well on DVR, on iPlayer, and repeat showings. So that generally is bumping it up. So, I mean, we know there's no danger of Doctor Who going away. We know about the five-year plan and all this other stuff. I'd also like to point out that's probably the first time on this podcast someone's used the word acquiesced. So thank you, Ben.
Thank you very much.
Our literacy level has doubled.
Yeah. I feel slightly, I feel a little bit like an imposter because I learned that word probably about 10 years ago from a Penny Arcade strip. So,
okay.
But yeah, it's an interesting thing. I was just going to say, yeah, to something. Marcus's point, that there's actually a story in the Radio Times today about, Mark Gatiss is kind of coming out and saying that going by the overnight figures these days are insane, and the it's just such an out of date way of judging an audience and judging something global like Doctor Who.
So. Yeah, I mean the way that people are watching television is changing more now than it's ever changed in the last 50 years. And another key point is Doctor Who. Each new season of Doctor Who over the last, I think, 2 or 3 years has broken records for BBC America when it's aired here in the US.
Right.
So I think that, I mean, it clearly makes a lot of money for BBC worldwide. So even if the viewing figures in the UK aren't necessarily great, I think that we are not at risk, especially with the five-year plan. We're not at risk of, I think, losing the show anytime in the immediate future. I just don't think it's going to happen.
No, and it's the same thing every season. It's just like, oh, ratings are down on TV, and could they get a new showrunner, and could BBC freak out and pull it indefinitely? But then it's immediately countered with like, well, all the other signs are that it's still way up, and it's going up every year, so you guys just need to chill. So it's not going to go away anytime soon, so long as this whole overnight thing and actual figures are still important to some people. But
I mean, you're 100% right. Here in the U.S., you can go into Hot Topic and buy Doctor Who stuff. Now, that blows my mind. Like, here's this show that I used to watch as a kid, where my dad would, you know, a classic serial would come out on VHS, and my dad would run out and buy it, and we'd sit on the couch and watch it together. And it was a thing that no one else in my school had heard of, or if they had, they thought it was that dumb thing their parents liked many, many years ago. I grew up with this, and the idea that you can go into, you know, Hot Topic or Barnes & Noble and grab Doctor Who stuff on the shelf. It's right there. Clothing and toys and books and games and DVDs and Blu-rays and action figures. Like, the fact that it's this worldwide phenomenon now is absolutely mind-blowing. I really don't see that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible I'm just, you know, being naive and unnecessarily and excessively hopeful, but I just don't see it going away. I think that people are kind of scared over nothing.
Mm-hmm. Has been into Hot Topic to buy all the Doctor Who Funkos when they came out. seriously, it's only the second time I've ever wandered into a Hot Topic, and it's a surreal experience.
Sure.
The reason that the naysayers are kicking around right now is, yeah, we know the ratings are up and down, like a you know, Lady of the Night's panties at Fleet Week. But the other thing is, the BBC is under attack in the UK, and it's under attack from the government.
Yes.
And this is something that, you know, the Brits, and I think Ben will definitely attest to this, you don't appreciate what you've got until you don't have it anymore. And
yeah, in the UK, there's definitely I would describe, well, actually Stephen Fry described it as a miserabilism. People are miserable, and they don't focus on the things that they have that are good. They focus on what they don't have and what isn't necessarily great right now. And if the BBC isn't, you know, I don't know where that thought was going to finish. I'm sorry, Marcus, you can just, I just started rambling.
It happens in the process, but they call it a Marcusism over here.
A Marcusism, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, basically, people are, you know, complaining about the BBC. It's biased in this, it's biased in that, or it's not biased enough. The Tory government is trying to make the BBC take ads, pulling back their budget, cutting back on the license fee, and these other things. And I mean, I would say, I mean, obviously, we're preaching to the choir with this podcast. I'm sure there are Brits out there who love the fact that, you know, love the BBC and love that, you know, that they can get their Doctor Who fix every week. But I would say, you know, spread the message to your friends who say the BBC shit. Tell them to come to America. Come to America. Book a 2-week holiday. Don't leave your motel. Just stay in front of the fucking TV for 2 weeks.
And see what you got. Everything, even the
Fox affiliate and NBC and TBS and all these other stations. You'll be gagging for the BBC. I mean, we finally subscribed to Hulu a couple of weeks back, and they have not only the BBC America roster, but they also have the BBC Worldwide roster. And there is a slew of programming there that hasn't even made it to BBC America.
Some great stuff, like the thick of it, which is, if you know Peter Capaldi, you'll know that that's one of the BBC shows that he was known for before he, you know, came onto Doctor Who. There's stuff like Moon Boy. There's stuff like Red Dwarf, which used to be on Netflix and is now on Hulu for some inexplicable reason. There's tons of great stuff.
The last two seasons, the two seasons that have, you know, been made and aired on Dave of Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
They also have one of my favorites in Stella, which is... I mean, it's by Ruth Jones. Is it Ruth Jones? Yeah, it's Ruth.
I think so.
Who co-wrote Gavin and Stacey? And that's a bit of, you know, we watched it last week, and you know, I said to my wife, if we ever moved to the UK, this would be your life. And she said, but I mean, you get all this stuff. I mean, you know, there's so many great shows out there that we don't get to see over here, but people don't appreciate. So, yeah, I think definitely if you're a Brit living in the UK, you really need to start appreciating the BBC, because otherwise it will end up that, you know, we will lose the likes of Doctor Who, or the only things that, you know, we won't get another Torchwood spin-off, you know, Torchwood-esque, which is kind of grown up, which, you know, could suit a, you know, the old audience of which we fall into that demographic, but we'll always end up with, like, you know, the Grange Hill with Daleks. Ben will understand that reference.
One more thing kind of along those lines. I don't want, again, don't want this topic to dominate the podcast, and certainly I don't want this podcast to be 100% British voices, but I do think the key thing with the BBC in the UK is a lot of people are saying, well, HBO in America, you know, they have the subscription fee, they pay, you know, $15 a month or however much it is, and they get access to Game of Thrones and all the other stuff. So why don't we do the BBC like that? And this is something that Russell T Davies talked about recently at a talk in the UK, which is that if you look at what HBO offers, there's no current affairs, there's no news, there's no special interest programs. You get your drama programming, and then if you're lucky, you know, you get 10 to 12 episodes of Game of Thrones a year, and then what else? Veep, maybe. Like, there's not that for your $15 a month, you're not actually getting as much as the BBC offers, and the BBC is technically less. What people pay with the license fee is less than you would be paying for an HBO subscription, and with that you get news, you get radio, you get a slew of television networks all broadcasting different types of programming for different audiences, and you have the BBC, which has a charter to produce programming for British audiences, including stuff that wouldn't necessarily be mainstream. And switching to an HBO style subscription system just wouldn't benefit the BBC, and it wouldn't benefit the people who watch it.
Charlie's left the call.
I'm here. Sorry, Ben.
Did you go into like Heidi mode or something?
There must just be too many great minds on this episode, because Google Hangout is not hanging out very well.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's certainly what it is. It's just way too much, like, intelligence at any given point, you know?
Yeah,
too much
exactly.
Handsomeness, too much just everything.
Well, the BBC works at about 75 cents a day.
Yeah, it's peanuts.
For British people. Yeah. It's less, you know, it's like 50p, I think. It's about 100, maybe even less than that. It's about 129, actually, it's probably near 40 minutes a day, so it's 129, 130 pounds a year for a license. And that's all the BBC channels. Also covers radio, which is a huge thing over there.
Do you guys think that like a Netflix could come in and, you know, if there were any issues with the BBC, the Netflix could come in and take over Doctor Who, at least for a season or two?
That's a tricky one. Yeah, I don't, and look, you got to remember, I love you Americans so much I came to live here. But I am just, you know, I'm stung by those horrible words, Torchwood Miracle Day.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't say stars, trust me. But, you know, Netflix could be a way for, you know, for
they just need the kind of right partner.
Well, exactly. The thing about Netflix to me is that, like, I don't know about, like, necessarily speaking qualitatively, like, whether or not it'd be any good, but if you look at, like, just from a realism of it happening standpoint, look at how, like, if you want to wonder where Doctor Who took off in America, it was when it came to Netflix. Like,
totally.
You look on Twitter, you look at social media at all, it's like 90% of the people that you know that are American and watching Doctor Who, they are either talking about how they are watching it now on Netflix and catching up now, or that is where they started on it in the first place. So, like, I have to imagine that, you know, the company Netflix is not completely blind to that, you know, fact, but whether or not it would be any good, I don't know. Like, Miracle Day was absolute, just like trash. It was like
it was Toilet City.
Yes, it was.
But, I think the Netflix argument, that, I mean, I get where you're coming from with that, but I also feel like when Doctor Who blew up in the States, it wasn't necessarily because, you know, the first four seasons ended up on Netflix, especially when you consider that up until 2014, in fact, Doctor Who was still very fragmented on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Planet of the Dead was missing. A Christmas Carol was missing. There was a period from 2011 to 2013 where The Waters of Mars and End of Time, etc., weren't listed with the main show. They were listed as separate entries. So it was very fragmented. I think that the period when Doctor Who really took off in the US is when the Sci-Fi Channel said, well, we're not going to carry this anymore after season four. Yeah. And then BBC America said, all right, that's fine, we've got it. And then when season five started, Matt Smith's first season, there were billboards everywhere. There were bus stop ads. There were ads in magazines. You know, BBC America knew what they had, and they pushed it. They marketed it. They knew how to market it. The Doctor Who Tumblr, the official Doctor Who Tumblr, which is managed by the BBC America team, is one of the best run official Tumblrs for a television show, because they get that, they get how to market it, and they get how to market to that audience and produce content for that audience. And I think that is something that Doctor Who in America has had since it came to BBC America. They have a team who know how to sell it to an American audience, where sci-fi didn't give a crap. And to your point about
it was only the first season. It was only the first season that was on sci-fi, and then then BBC America got it back for the 10th era.
I'm pretty confident that they had that the Sci-Fi Channel had everything up to Journey's End, because I remember watching season four on Sci-Fi when it came out over here.
No, they had the rights to repeat, but BBC America, as soon as Big Ears Eccleston fucked off. And he's doing such a good job on The Leftovers, isn't he? I still hate that guy. I can't help it. As soon as he buggered off, it was a one-season deal, and it went to BBC America for literally, I think, from the Christmas special on. And then, you know, it carried on from there, because Tennant's entire time was Christmas special. And I'll tell you, was BBC America. I'll tell you why, because I actually remember watching the specials on BBC America.
Oh yeah, well, my memory is that everything from the Next Doctor onwards, like the 2009 specials, so everything from the Next Doctor right the way through to End of Time, and then obviously the Matt Smith stuff. That stuff premiered on BBC America. But my memory of that is that the Next Doctor didn't premiere at Christmas. It actually premiered in just before Comic-Con, and then Comic-Con 2009, BBC America were making a big deal of trailers for Planet of the Dead, which had obviously already aired in the UK at Easter and aired on BBC America. It was one of their first high def broadcasts in, I want to say, July of 2009.
Couldn't be more wrong if you tried.
I'm going to the internet. I'm looking it up.
You look it up. All of Tennant's stuff was on BBC America from the get-go.
I am almost entirely confident that you are wrong, absolutely brimming over with wrongability, but we will
see. I had myself muted here, and I didn't realize it, but I was trying to say that...
classic Stormy.
Yeah, classic Lonely TARDIS production values right there. I was going to say, I looked this up 10 minutes ago and found out that it is, I believe it was the first four seasons ran for Sci-Fi Channel. BBC picked it up, it began re-airing the entire 2005 series in the US on November 21st, 2006. So and just from my own personal memories, I want to say when I was watching Doctor Who, BBC had it, but they had it later. They would air the episodes, but they would begin syndicating them after they had already hit Sci-Fi Channel.
I believe the phrase you're looking for is booyah.
I may be old and going senile, but I switched away from sci-fi because I hated the way they treated Doctor Who. And I remember watching the 10 stuff on BBC America, including, you know, the horrible Martha Jones season. And I remember, you know, when they got the Christmas specials running at the right time, and I know we were slightly delayed on the Tennant ones by 24 hours, I think. I think it was just that it was just the first season, or maybe I just started.
It was the Tennant run. I actually do now that all this is shaking loose in my mind. I do remember the Matt Smith episode, premiere and everything like that, Prisoner Zero and everything like that, hitting BBC America was a big fucking deal, not just for the BBC, but also just, for me personally, because I was at, the height of Doctor Who fandom with me, with, the, you know, the exit of Tennant being so good as it was.
Height of fandom.
Yeah, all right, let's continue. Because, I can blow this argument out of the water right now with the BBC America entry on the Doctor Who wiki on Wikipedia.
Have you guys heard?
Yes.
that Capaldi was forced to move.
Forced to move?
Uh-huh. If you check out the link in the chat from the Daily Record, Doctor Who star Peter Capaldi forced to move house after being besieged by fans turning up at his door.
Well, I mean, I thought you were going to say that like he had to move because like that volcano on the mountain just did not look right. You know, it's real bad. So,
no, that would have probably been more acceptable.
That is a little weird. Yeah. Why this? Why Capaldi? Like, is Capaldi's house just like more public than Tennant or Smith? Not to like, you know, throw shade at Capaldi or anything like that. Not to like blow up his spot, but like. Capaldi? Like,
it sounds to me like the Scots are just really intense.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe David Tennant didn't live there at the time. Maybe, you know, David was out in, I don't know, California.
David Tennant had a flat in Cardiff.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they all had flat, really nice flats in Cardiff, actually. Went right in Cardiff Bay, Russell T. Davis was there. I mean, because they were spending 9 months a year there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all, a lot of the guys, John Barrowman, David Tennant, Russell T. Davies, Julie Gardner, all had apartments in the same building, even.
Interesting.
Liz Sladen as well, when she was doing the Sarah Jane Adventures. It was interesting, a lot of the stories that I heard from John Barrowman and David Tennant after Liz Sladen passed away, about how they were all in the same building, and you know they would you know see each other coming and going for various you know shooting, and you know how they'd all go out together at night.
Oh, that would just be phenomenal to live in that building.
Oh, stars, they're just like us.
They're just like us. They live in apartments as well.
And they're just like that show, that Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man. Would that be a – it was like the show Friends, actually, the wonderful TV show Friends. Anyways, let's great discussion. We do, unfortunately, need to move on.
Of course.
And get to the episode. We're going to hold off a little bit on the Red Lady chat just so we can dive into the episode. We'll save the Red Lady Big Finish stuff for next week. So this week's episode, we're going to get right into it. Zygon Inversion, the second part, obviously, of last week's Zygon Invasion. I'll read the quick little synopsis here, by the way, which is shape-shifting Zygons are everywhere in the UK, and there is no way of knowing who to trust. With UNIT neutralized, only the Doctor stands in their way. But how do you stop a war, and what can the Doctor do to save his friends? Now, the main focus of this episode was to get the Osgood box and kind of both UNIT and the Zygons are trying to get to this box and either start or prevent this war from happening. As we mentioned last week, there's been this peace treaty between the Zygons and the humans. 20 million Zygons have been living in the world, and that the frailty of that peace treaty is beginning to show. Which would explain how Osgood returned back to Doctor Who. So I want to get your that's kind of brief. I want to get your initial thoughts on this episode. Remember what we talked about last week. So Ben, last week, just kind of bring you up to date. Marcus and I had a blast with last week's episode. Really enjoyed Zygon Invasion. We both kind of felt it was just classic fun Who, and then we had the other guys who for some reason thought it was really bad or horrible.
Don't you come in here with your weird like interpretation job trying to like change history or something
for
like that.
For some reasons.
Paint yourself as the victors.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that you guys, there were those of you who really liked last week's episode, and then there were the people who were wrong. And yes. That's where the headbutting occurred.
You know who wrote a really good a good overview of last
week? Yes, I was going to mention it.
Yeah. It was a really, really good. I mean, it's totally on point. And I think that person, you know, that person is just a genius. Even though it seems that he might have been right about sci-fi, and I'll tell you why. I think I know why, because I'm not proud of this. Because I basically started downloading Doctor Who from the UK every Saturday as soon as it would go live, because I knew I wasn't on Sci-Fi and I'd watch it on my computer. I did actually buy every box set to make sure that the BBC got my money, but that's what it was. I wouldn't watch it on Sci-Fi because it was so shit. And I apologize, Ben. You were right. I got it wrong.
I accept your apology with grace and dignity.
This is the first time Marcus has apologized on the show. Please, what's the timestamp on this? It's 8:43 Eastern, 5:43 Pacific. Let's get the
Write it down.
Some, write it down. Put it in an envelope. Books.
Mail it to yourself. You want to keep the rights to that.
anyways, beautiful. Back to this episode. And
yes.
Ben, you wrote a really great piece about last week's episode.
Yeah, I wrote a review of the Zygon invasion for a Doctor Who website called Unlimited Rice Pudding! ! Where I basically just kind of, my feeling is that this is about as modern Doctor Who has been. This is the most contemporary episode of the show since it came back, where we're dealing with what is a very modern, very contemporary being kind of the key word. If you've read a review of the Zygon invasion anywhere, they've used that word like they're worried they're about to run out of tokens to use it. But it's just Doctor Who has never in its entire 53-year history tackled a current social issue with the kind of head-on crystal clear clarity that the Zygon invasion went into. They tried in the 80s with the Happiness Patrol, was kind of an attempt to kind of poke holes in Thatcher's Britain, and there was another story that I can't remember the name of that featured I'm blanking on it. I'm going to stop talking. It was a Colin Baker episode where they talked. It was basically an analogy for like the video nasties and like banned movies from the late 70s, early 80s. But this is the first time we've had something that is so of the moment with the refugee crisis that's currently happening in the UK and in Europe, with ISIS. With to a certain extent Islamophobia. The idea that just because someone is of this race of these people, then clearly they must be the bad guys, and that's very clearly not the case. It's much more nuanced than this, and the fact that they tackled all of these things so well in the first part of the story, which aired last week, is absolutely thrilling. I adored the first part of this story, and I went into the Zygon inversion with very, very high expectations.
Were they met?
Oh yes, absolutely. To the extent where I mean, my personal feeling is that Zygon Invasion, Zygon Inversion might just be my favorite two-parter of the new series run since 2005. Like the way that everything built up in the first story, in the first part of the first part of the story, and the way that it was all paid off in the second half, it's just absolutely fantastic. It felt very, very modern, with a couple of little winks to the past, such as Kate Stewart's Five Rounds Rapid line. Mm-hmm. The Osgood boxes, in fact, very clearly being invocative of the moment.
Yes.
And that whole 15.
And that was brought up too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the entire, a lot of people, when the 50th anniversary aired in 2013, a lot of people complained that it retconned the Time War away and undid all of the emotional damage that we saw the 9th and obviously to a greater extent the 10th Doctor go through during the Russell T. Davies. A lot of people were annoyed about that, which I never really agreed with, just because the double genocide that the Doctor believed that he'd committed hadn't happened. That doesn't mean that he didn't still believe that he'd been responsible for that. That doesn't make the guilt that he experienced during that time period any less impactful and didn't shape him as a character. But here, through the 12th Doctor's monologue, through his talking about war and impact and genocide and the way it changes a person and shapes, through all that, we got a glimpse of a Doctor who, even though he was able to go back and stop himself from doing something that he'd carried this guilt for at that point, like 400 years, he still feels it. Like, this is something that he still very clearly feels strongly about, passionately about. His entire rant about war and the way it changes people, and revolution, and when you have what is essentially a terroristic revolution, what comes next? I thought all of that was so not just brilliantly written, but marvelously performed by Peter Capaldi. And I think that every Doctor has a moment that defines them as the Doctor, where you watch that moment, you think, that, okay, he's the Doctor. I totally get it. I think for a lot of people for whom season 8 may not have convinced them that Capaldi was the Doctor, I think this is the moment. I think this is the moment where you watch him giving that speech and you think, okay, yes, that is absolutely the man. He has nailed it. And I think that this is Peter Capaldi's "Have I That Right" speech, basically. This is the thing that people are going to remember, not just about Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, but about Doctor Who for hopefully a very, very long time. This is it. This is the speech. I have goosebumps listening to it. I've gone back and listened to just that moment, I think half a dozen times in the last few days, and I'm probably going to do it again when we finish recording. It was just wonderful, brilliant, moving. I cried watching it for the first time. You know, it's just this incredibly potent, powerful moment. And it really is kind of the linchpin of the episode. Mm-hmm. It's the definitive moment for the entire 45-minute runtime. And I loved it. And I loved the whole thing, start to finish, the whole episode, the whole story. Marvelous.
Now, I want to hear from Sean on this aspect, because I feel as though you probably had the harshest words to say last week. I don't want to say harsh, but you had the...
I believe the term you're looking for is the most wrong.
The most wrong words last week. But you had a lot to say about last week's episode and how there were a lot of plot holes and it deviated from some of what Capaldi was trying to do in other episodes this season.
Yeah, my point mostly last week, without getting too granular, was that I felt that they tried to tackle a fantastic, important issue in a way that just was not – it did not service the characters well. And I felt that they you know, the plot moved forward at the expense of what characters would normally do, think, say, and so on. That said, I'm in agreement 100%, and our new friend Ben here actually made the points I was going to make. I mean, the speech at the end is – that's the episode, right? Yes, I mean, yeah. A lot of people that liked it, you know, will take the two-parter together and feel like it's a great kind of story in Modern Who and give it props for tackling issues and stuff like that, which is fine, but – what's going to go down forever, what's going to cement this, what's going to be, you know, shown in compilation videos and referenced and have previous Doctor actors at conventions giving, you know, the speech is the Capaldi bit at the end. I mean, that's what's going to be remembered more than anything else from this episode. Once people kind of move away a little bit from how cool it is and how important it is for it to tackle these issues. And I'm not saying that people won't remember that. You know, its fans are going to totally remember that, you know, this two-parter with the Zygons and stuff was the time that the show went and tried to talk about, you know, the refugee crisis and everything else. But I think anybody would be kidding themselves if they didn't say that the moment where Capaldi cements himself as the Doctor wins over a ton of new fans and genuinely just steals the last, it probably wasn't this long, but looking back on it and having rewatched it and thinking about it now, it really feels like the whole second half of the episode. Right. I mean, that could have been a 5 or 10 minute speech. I don't even know, but it just felt like
it was about 10 to 15 minutes. It was, I mean, that whole scene with them in the Black Archive with the two Osgood box.
Yeah,
that whole scene was about a quarter to a third of the episode. It was the whole thing.
Yeah. And it felt like it, you know, and it's important and it's really, really cool. And it's really well done. And I think just to echo Ben's sentiments, this is what people have been waiting for from Capaldi, mm-hmm. right? This is his moment when, you know, Smith made one or two similar big speeches and big to-dos and everything. And obviously Tennant had his great ones too, and even Eccleston with the Nobody Dies and stuff like that. But that was just phenomenal. I mean, to me, I thought that it was a bit of a slow build-up to the end, and I really didn't know where they were going to go. But that, to me, just sealed it. I mean, that made the episode that – brought everything together, and that's honestly what I'm going to remember more than you know, the quibbles I have with the stuff leading up to that and even some stuff after that. But honestly, that was just so well done and so powerful, and it's just such a testament to everything fans like us, you know, we're fans of Capaldi. It vindicates everything we've been saying about him since the beginning, right? Even when he's been given you know, rubbish lines or silly, you know, childish plots or whatever, that scene is everything we've been talking about. All the potential we've seen, all the, you know, props and everything like that we've given him. So it was great. That right there was great. And that's going to elevate the episode more than anything else, in my opinion.
Hey, Ben, I hate to disagree with you again, but with regards to the time, I just checked on the internet the time. the length of that thing. I'm getting word that the actual speech is still going.
Man, I wish it was still going. I mean, I would watch that forever.
Hey, he did rehearse it 15 times, so maybe you were just seeing the first or second time.
Well, yeah. that's an interesting point, because yes. When they reach the end of that moment and they wipe everyone's memory, is the Doctor says, you didn't remember the last 15 times, boom. And a lot of people have taken that to mean, oh, this is the 15th time the Zygons have attempted to revolt. This is the 15th time the Zygons have been revolting. Oh, but that's so. A terrible joke. I'm going to keep going. But I choose my personal interpretation. Leans one of two ways. Either it's the 15th time that Kate Stewart has discovered the Osgood box and the nature of the Osgood boxes, and the Doctor's gone and kind of zapped the memory. Or alternatively, it's the 15th time that he's gone through this exchange with both Bonnie and Kate, which leads to an interesting reinterpretation of that speech, because that speech doesn't just come from a place of, look, here's why I did this. It comes from a place of exasperation. Like, yes. He's gone through this speech, yep. or he's gone through this scenario a dozen yes. times and tried a dozen different ways to convince them both to stand down. And he gets to this attempt, which is ostensibly attempt 16, and just kind of loses his shit and just mm-hmm. kind of... And I love that. I love that there are different ways to read that scene, but I think that's probably my favorite interpretation.
This was the most Capaldi of the entire last season and a half, right? This has been this episode, and I think this two-part arc really brought out the Capaldi in this Doctor. And I think this is what you guys have all mentioned it. This has cemented Capaldi as this Doctor, yes. But I think. This, for the most part, it wasn't just that speech, I think, and all the buildup throughout the season as well. And I made the point at the end of last year and at the beginning of this year, which was the Doctor kept asking himself, what kind of man am I? What kind of man am I? Am I a good man? Am I a bad man? We never really learned it at the end of last season, but this year we have been seeing that he's figured it out. He knows what he is, and that has made him so much more compelling of a character, because now he has a goal. He has an aim, and it's not to be the asshole, although he does that. Capaldi does that so wonderfully as an actor to add his own twist on things. And even to the point where by the way, I'm jumping in with my turn right now. Even to the point where they bring up the sonic specs and he says, just don't look at my browser history. And she goes, oh, he said, I told you not to look. We wouldn't have seen that from Tennant or Smith. Or even Eccleston. I think that was pure Capaldi-ism.
Absolutely.
And there were so many more aspects of that. Even with like the when they jump out of the airplane, and he comes down wearing the Union Jack flag as his parachute, and Osgood says, "Why are you wearing the Union Jack?" He says, "Well, it's camouflage. We're in Britain." It's like that's brilliant. You would not have seen that before. And so it's the dot at the end of that exclamation point at the end of the sentence. That reads this: Peter Capaldi is the motherfucking Doctor right now. Pardon my French or whatever.
Oh no, my Gallifreyan. This isn't my podcast, but by all means, swear as fucking much as you like.
Thank you.
I think the interesting point to make is last year the performance we got from Capaldi. And this is kind of, if you've listened to the soundtrack for season 8, the 12th Doctor's theme kind of underscores this. But last year we got a very Christopher Nolan Dark Knight Doctor, mm-hmm, who's very kind of to the point and kind of very methodical, if a little bit cold in his resolution of storylines, as evidenced in Mummy on the Orient Express, which is probably the best standalone episode of last season. But this season... we've seen Capaldi's Doctor really come into his own. He stopped being that kind of grim, dark, super stern, not necessarily unlikable, but bordering on unlikable version of the character. Mm-hmm. And now that he's playing kind of the aging punk rocker, like the granddad who saw that, you know, we've seen that, you know, the Smiths and the Ramones perform live, you know. And I really like this interpretation of the Doctor. I really like. Last year, I had this feeling whenever I would watch him, I would go, oh, that's Peter Capaldi playing the Doctor. And with every previous Doctor, with Eccleston from his first episode, I thought, he is the Doctor. With David Tennant, it took a couple of episodes, but yes, he is the Doctor. With Matt Smith, when he steps through the hologram towards the end of the 11th hour and says, hello, I'm the Doctor, I go, yes, you are. You absolutely are. But with season 8, I thought, that is Peter Capaldi playing the Doctor. Mm-hmm. With this season... That's my phone getting a text message. With this season,
It's me telling
very
you to
much
shut
so
up.
With this season. That's you telling me to shut up. Thank you very much for that. Although with this episode kind of cements it, but every episode this season, I haven't felt like I'm watching someone pretending to be the Doctor. I felt like I'm watching the Doctor, and I think that is the the key distinction between have you accepted this actor as the Doctor or not yet?
You nail it. I mean, you absolutely nailed it. And I think that this is finally, to me, I'm watching. You're right. I can't disagree with you at all. welcome to the show, Ben Penn. I'm just going to leave my seat right now and let you take over because I think you've managed to just say what has been on my mind. I've been trying to verbalize it, but we needed that literacy level to go up. No, I totally agree with you. And there was so many other supporting aspects of the last episode and this episode that I thought were great. And it's the little details, I think, that have been fitting in really well and really supporting, you know, the Kapal Doctor. Can I call it Kapal Doctor? I don't know. I mean, we mentioned the speech, but I love that he went into game show host mode with the two boxes. And again, it ties right back into Truth or Consequences and the TV show and his voice and the way he accentuated himself. And
wasn't the accent fantastic?
Yes, it was. It was brilliant. And it was just so much was built into this episode that I want to rewatch both these episodes back to back. I would have been happy if this had been released as a special, you know?
Yeah.
As a full hour long, yeah. 2 hour long. Exactly. And I think that, and this goes back to the idea of the two episodes. Do you guys hear a weird noise?
I did, but it seems to have passed.
Oh. Was it like a tinkling noise?
No, I'm hearing a very low flying black helicopter outside. I guess the unit is on to me.
It might actually be my laptop because it decided to go. Absolutely.
Okay. But I lost my train of thought. Anyways, I these two parters, and there has been some folks who haven't loved the two parters. I fully love them now because they're able to tell a complete story from beginning to end and really flush it out without having to rush through things. Like last year, almost every single episode, especially the ones that Moffat had his hands on, felt very rushed and there wasn't completion and they blew through details. I think doing two episode arcs has really helped get those details in and get to the point and not only get to the point, which I'm trying to do right now, but make sure that we get a complete story. And that's really what has helped this season. So, Marcus, I cut you off as you started talking. What were your thoughts?
Oh, I thought it fucking sucked.
I hope you're lying. I know approximately where you live.
And you also know I have a rabid dog. No, I thought it was... It wasn't as brilliant for me, perhaps, as the week before. Because that was a really tough episode to follow because leave so many things up in the air. Like, you know, how is the Doctor going to get out of this? I mean, you know, why, you know, there's not going to be a win-win scenario for anybody. And yet we managed to get one. You're right about Capaldi's speech. Hairs on the back of my neck. This was his coming out party. And, you know, this was right up there with me with the Christmas special that Tennant did where they were on the Orient Express the Titanic in space. And, you know, it's like, I'm the Doctor. I'm from Gallifrey in the constellation of Castorberus. I'm blah, 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 blah. And that was a cool moment where it's like, yes, this guy's the Doctor. So I'm totally with you on that. One of the things I thought of with regards to, you know, this is the 15th time he said it was?
Yeah.
Let me throw out this potential mind bender. I mean, obviously it's only been, 18 months? No, almost 2 years since Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, it'll be 2 years this month.
So 15 times in 2 years, or has the Doctor gone through this 14 more times in the future? And is coming back to it because otherwise, look, if it's gone through it 15 times in 2 years, this ceasefire is never going to fucking hold.
Well, remember that at the very end, Clara mentions, oh, you must have thought I was dead for the last 5 minutes, so that's been a month to me.
Well, I think that's just down to the level of love he has for Clara as a companion, where, you know, when you think somebody's dead or somebody's gone, I mean, it's like a breakup. When somebody's not in your life anymore, time drags. And I think for him, you know, as somebody who is 2,000 years old and has seen, you know, it all and sees it all, I think that's just the whole, you know, I think that might just be a, you know, yeah, you know, when somebody says, oh, I was only gone for half an hour, it's like, oh, yeah, longest week of my life, ha ha. But I think that was just more with his perspective. But I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if we get a touchback on this moving forward, because I really don't think that the 15 times or the 14 other times have been in the last 2 years, because it would be the worst ceasefire ever. It would never last again.
Yeah, I mean, my interpretation of that scene is that being 15 attempted run-throughs of trying to get them to stand down in that room, like that instant, is probably the most, or the, let me rephrase that, is the least worst interpretation of that line. You could talk it up to hyperbole, or you could, I mean, the theory that, you know, these are other events that have happened in the future that, you know, haven't happened yet for Earth, but that the Doctor has experienced, would be is an interesting touchstone, because there is currently a theory floating around that Clara actually died between season 8 and season 9, and the Doctor has gone back to kind of have some adventures with her before she's died. I don't know. I personally don't put a lot of truck in that theory, because people said the same thing about the Ponds during season 7. Like, there are people who still believe that those stories did not happen in the chronological order in which we experienced them, that everything from the first half of season 7 actually takes place after the angels take Manhattan for the Doctor. I personally don't take that as an accurate interpretation of what happened, but I think that that theory has come around again with Clara, and I think that maybe it merits some discussion. I'm not convinced, but there is a possible interpretation of the Doctor's like longest month of my life line as being a cue that maybe this is something that we're going to visit towards the end of the season.
I think if we get a payoff on that in the next 3 episodes, then obviously it becomes a really valid theory. I think the Ponds one, obviously the longer we go back, you know, or go forward from that, the more stupid an idea it becomes, because I think that actually set them off, wrapped them up in an interesting bow. But given how well this season is performing, especially in relation to last year, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a curveball. It almost seems, and Ben, I mean, obviously you haven't been on the last couple of podcasts, but this season for me, I have felt that every two-parter is basically something that could have been an hour and 15 minutes long, all told, and they just padded out. Strong starts, mediocre finishes. I think this one is the first two-parter that actually is a great all-encompassing story. It is topical. And again, you know, I think this is something that's perhaps more personal to the Brits, because we do follow what goes on in our homeland. And we do read The Guardian, because we're, you know, liberal creative types.
Soppy wet liberals, of course.
Yes, that's what we are. But, I mean, we see, you know, we see this shit going on, and we see, you know, the surveillance thing that's going on. I just thought this was, you know, certainly it was the best ending to a two-parter this season. Mm-hmm. And I think it really, you know, it was certainly the best story of the season. And it's right up there for me with the flat 2D people of last year, which was my favorite episode of last year. Orient Express was obviously a really good one. But this one, for me, is just, you know, it was there. And Capaldi nailed it. And it was nice to have that touch back to Day of the Doctor, where, you know, he was, you know, he said that, you know, he was in this room and, you know, he used the same plot device again, because you could see it kind of coming. And I will say that Clara's way more interesting when she's born.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's, you know, that's not down to any issue with Jenna Coleman, who I think, you know, is a fine actress and has had to deal with some garbage over the past 3.5, almost 4 years. But yeah, I just, this episode, it felt like, you know, it harkened back to a Baker episode. Capaldi went full on Tom. And I am down with that. He, you know, as you guys said, this was the moment where he claimed the throne. And you know who he also reminded me of? And it was interesting, I think Ben said about, you know, watching The Smiths and The Cure and all that sort of stuff. He reminded me almost of Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Bob Dylan.
Absolutely.
Era Bob Dylan, where he was speaking out against stuff. And the other thing that obviously this episode really does nail down, and this will be my last point, is that at the end of the day, the Doctor is Jesus.
That's fair.
I mean, he's the one who, you know, he brought everybody together. And look, this is somebody who is only celebrates Christmas because I get a Doctor Who special. I mean, I love Christmas, but I don't do religion. But yeah, I mean, he is that, you know, he's that Superman character. He is the guy who saved the day, pulled it all together. And, you know, fair dues. Last week I was like, oh, it's going to be a big red fucking button and they're going to hit it and everything will be retconned. And no, he argued the shit out of it.
Yep.
And then hit, and then used the memory wipe on one person so that everybody else knew what had transpired, so they could live with that decision. So, you know, that was like, yeah, this was actually a great finish.
Yep.
It was wrapped up. It carried on, you know, exceeded my expectations. Not outstanding a bit last week, but still mighty fine.
All right, Stephen, it's your turn. We've been holding you back. We've been waiting for your thoughts and getting all of our R's out first. And you are what this podcast is built around. Yeah. Stephen, just go, buddy. Just go.
Well, it's weird to say that because I actually did talk earlier. It was that black helicopter sound that you heard. Yeah. You just you had all forgotten what my voice sounded like. And
You've actually told us what you're about to tell us 15 times already, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every time you guys don't come around in my line of thinking, I erase your memories and try it again.
You're gonna be going for a while, I'm sure.
Okay.
Get the Sonic sunglasses.
Yeah.
So, this episode is well executed.
Cool. Great. That's all we need to hear. Great job. Thanks for your opinion.
The helicopters are coming for you next.
The new guy's got jokes.
It's well meaning. Well executed, well-meaning gibberish, like idiot. It's well-meaning idiocy. It's like the final message of the show. It's rounds up to something very similar to what I, you know, talked about last week with the ideas behind the episode, sort of being subversively incorrect. I totally agree with a lot of the things that you guys said. Before I get to the real meat of what I'm getting at here, I do want to say, like, Capaldi getting up there and talking and really doing it, you know, really getting it done. I think it's
really just doing it, just getting it done.
He's in there. He's got his head in the game. You know, he's giving it 110%. And once he's out there on that field, you know, he just went for it. You know,
he basically Capaldi'd it.
He wanted, you know, he just wanted it more than the other team. He wanted it more than the other doctors. You know. Anyway, you know, good for him. You know, good for him that, like, he finally, after a season and a half, finally managed to do what Matt Smith and David Tennant managed to do within the first 20 minutes of their respective premieres. Good for Capaldi.
In bed asleep.
I couldn't understand any of that because you were talking about this.
I'm gonna pull age seniority on that. For the last 18 months, he's been dealing with the garbage that Moffat delivered to him.
He's still been pretty awesome.
His timeline for him to actually have a role that he could sink his teeth into.
Oh, sure. Don't get me wrong. It's not necessarily a matter of, like, you know, Capaldi's inability to act or anything like that. We've seen him on other shows before, Doctor Who. I don't think anybody can question that Capaldi is a fine actor and totally capable and totally affecting. But, like, you know, it's still just a greater, you know, my greater sentiment about, like, Capaldi as the character has been handled. Like, Capaldi as the character, yeah, sure, like, you know, I'm super happy that I'm still watching Doctor Who and I, you know, finally get to see a doctor that is worth watching for, you know, 5 minutes at a time. But, like, at the same time, like, it doesn't necessarily make up for, like, the fact that we had to, you know, get through so much to get here. And, you know, whether or not that is the payoff is actually worth it there, well, you know, it, that might, you know, be a little bit too early to say. We'll see how, the, you know, this whole season wraps up and we'll see how Capaldi's whole run wraps up and everything like that. And, you know, hindsight's 2020, we can say all that stuff. You know, it's a good speech in terms of, you know, presentation and everything like that. I thought it was great. Now, on to the important stuff, which is all the bad stuff, as you probably know. It's once again, it's that, like, strangely subvert, like, it's that sort of, like, subversive, like, anti-liberal, anti-progressive sentiment that, like, disguises itself as, you know, being that way. And again, I think it's well-meaning, and I think it's, like, you know, I think it's more accident than it is malice, as it is, you know, in so many, like, political debates and stuff like that. But and normally I don't try to get into this stuff, but, like, this episode and this two-parter is so steeped in that stuff that it is almost impossible to ignore it, which is, you know, and specifically what I'm talking about is, like, this idea that we have Capaldi coming up here and we have him, you know, half of this episode is Capaldi just calmly, you know, rationally trying to explain to two people near him, you know, about how he gets it, you know, like, he is more experienced, he's smarter than them, he, you know, he's done it a million times, and he gets to make these decisions for them and stuff like that, and I kind of hate that. Like, I kind of, like, absolutely 100% hate it. You know, whatever your interpretation of the 15 times thing is, especially, like, that is kind of the icing on the cake for me in this whole concept of, like, I have had to sit, okay, well, I am your, you know, bright father here to explain to you children of humanity with your, you know, differences, you very specific metaphors for, you know, different races and different, you know, genders and, you know, all these modern concepts. I am here to explain to you why you are wrong and I am right, and I know what's best for you.
He does call them children at one point.
He literally calls them children. He literally calls himself the like, dad at some point or something like that.
If you're 2 years old and you're dealing with a bunch of 30 and 40, or in some cases, you know, 18-month-old, because obviously the spawning and, you know, the zygons spawn and mature very quickly. Of course you're going to deal with them like fucking kids, because that's what they are.
I think that makes perfect sense for his character to do that and stuff like that. I don't necessarily even think that's wrong, but I think that the writing end still needs to take into account the symbolism of what they're saying and, like, the more subtle things that they are trying to, like, that they are presenting here into that as well. And I think that is something that this season in particular has been notoriously bad about, is having characters that are self-aware and not just, like, playthings for the Doctor, sometimes almost literally with, like, the way that he disposes of people and or, like, allows people to be disposed of pretty regularly, which, and I've explained this many times before in the past, that is to me not what I necessarily like. I think that is something that is perfectly valid as a character trait, but I, for the character that is the Doctor, I don't necessarily think it's what I want, and I don't necessarily think it's what it should be. Which, you know, we have literal dumpsters full of dead bodies in the previous episode. We have people's dead bodies being swept away in the street because apparently London has been completely annihilated or something like that, and people aren't freaked out about Zygons except until the script says that they should be freaked out about Zygons, but, you know, out there in the world.
I don't even know if anybody did freak out about Zygons.
Well, the news was pointing out to them, like, the news was like, it's like, hey, there's Zygons all over, isn't that weird? Whereas, like, in the middle of the street and everything like that, like, there was no cops, there was no, you know...
Well, the only time in the entire episode that's in the news is where that one Zygon is seen after Bonnie removes his ability to disguise as a human. It's not like there's a mass Zygon invasion. And again, I think one of the things that this episode goes to great pains, both of these episodes, in fact, goes to great pains to say, is that this is not a Zygon invasion. This is not every Zygon stepping forward and saying, yes, we are conquering the Earth. This is a small splinter group of radical extremists who do not believe that they should be forced to disguise as humans. And then the key point, that one Zygon who's trying to transform back into a human but can't because of what Bonnie did to him, making a key point of like, we just want to live here. We just want to live in peace. We just want to be able to exist. It doesn't, like, to most of them, it doesn't matter whether they have to quote unquote integrate or not. They just want to live there in peace. And I think that that's something that a lot of people, and a few people on Tumblr, because I do keep abreast of what Doctor Who fans are doing on Tumblr, seem to get, is that this isn't an episode, this isn't a story about all the Zygons want to conquer Earth. It's a story about how some Zygons want to conquer Earth, and the rest of them just want to fucking get on with their lives and shop and watch television and have chips and go to bed. Like, that's basically that's what this story is about. It's about how it's so, and that's why Kate Stewart's plan of just blow, you know, just bomb the entire site, bomb them all. That's why the Doctor shoots that down, because if you do that, you'll radicalize the lot, because it's not all of the Zygons. It's just a sliver. It's a percentage of a percentage.
All right. You know,
hang on. Sorry, I'm going to jump in because I'm agreeing with Ben because he's right. But I'll just go back to something you said, Stephen, while it's fresh in my mind. You said almost like this is an anti-liberal kind of like episode. And I've seen this pop up on a lot of American message boards regarding Doctor Who and the last two episodes. And to me, I don't know what it is, but the way I look at it is you've got the three sides. You've got Kate Stewart. I mean, and again, this is a British show. So Kate Stewart is the current government. She is Britain First. She, you know, which is a teabagger-esque party in the UK. And then you've got Bonnie, who is, you know, thinly disguised, ISIS, minority, 20,000 or whatever it is, one of your rebellions. And then you've got the Doctor. The Doctor is super fucking liberal. He is the original liberal. And you know what? Without blowing shit up, he gets firm with people, but he saves the day. He talks to people, makes them see the errors of their ways. And the first one to back down is actually Kate Stewart. So as a message for being a liberal and being somebody who is accepting of other cultures and isn't going to be afraid of what these these other people moving into your country are going to do, he is the fucking poster child. And the other thing is that, you know, with the whole regards to the media not really freaking out or anything, as was said, it's not an invasion, they're already here. But this, you know, this episode takes place over what, 24, 36, 48 hours tops before any shit really goes
you can really stretch it to 72. This
video that is released by them, which is propaganda. Yeah. So I would say that, and maybe, like I said, it's a generational thing. Maybe it's a nationality thing. But this is the most pro-liberal, you know, you could drop Bernie Sanders in the Doctor's role.
And it would work.
And it would work. Fucking Bernie Sanders. And that's just, that's my perspective.
Or you could drop Larry David in the Doctor's role.
Don't even start
Larry David as Bernie Sanders. You know, one of
Larry David as Bernie Sanders as the Doctor.
One of the interesting things, and this isn't strictly speaking what this episode is about, but some people have even been able to retrofit a transgender interpretation of some of these Zygon story elements into the narrative. And it's not a perfect fit. It's not what the episode is about, but you can, there are certain aspects and certain elements of the show that you can interpret in that manner. In particular, the Doctor asking Osgood, which are you, human or Zygon? As my friend Seb Patrick is the person who pointed this out, so I don't want to say this without giving him due credit. He's the editor in chief of Unlimited Rice Pudding. But he pointed out the Doctor asking Osgood, are you human or Zygon? Is very, very on point with asking someone, what is your name used to be? You know, it's her flat refusal to answer the question is incredibly trans relevant. There are a lot of incredibly in the same way that Kill the Moon has a potentially conservative pro-life interpretation, which is not necessarily what they intended. The Zygon invasion and the Zygon inversion has a transgender interpretation that works for it. But I think whichever way you cut it, whichever way you're looking at this episode, it is an incredibly liberal piece of fiction. And in order, I think in order to interpret it as anything other than anti-war, anti-extremism, anti-knee-jerk reaction to extremism, an anti-war on terror, if we're being blunt, the only way to interpret it, if you want to interpret it as a conservative story, as something that is closed off, closed-minded, you have to retcon and kind of read into something that simply isn't there. That interpretation of this story simply does not exist.
Stephen, the floor is yours.
Okay. Great. Thanks for thanks for giving it to me. Thanks for your permission.
I hereby yield the remainder of my time.
I'm sorry. We interrupted, but I don't know what you said is something I have seen a lot on American message boards, and I'm wondering if it is an American psyche versus a British psyche thing, because I'm not seeing as much of it on British message boards. And what's interesting is Kill the Moon, same writer as this one. Some people have said it's a pro-life thing, and isn't that the beauty of Doctor Who, where you it can actually mean so many different things to different people?
Yeah.
So please,
I still get baffled when I go to like Gallifrey One or Chicago TARDIS, and there are super conservative, Republican Doctor Who fans, because I've always felt like Doctor Who is antithetical to that worldview. But anyway, blah 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 blah. Sorry, Stephen. You're by all means welcome to continue your argument. We've kind of trampled you a little bit with our dissenting screeching. So our apologies, or my apologies at least, do continue.
So the thing that I have with this is that it's all just too, I hear it's the same conversation we had last week and everything like that. It's like people are interpreting this as like a conservative story. People are interpreting this as a liberal story, one way or the other. Whereas what I've been trying to find the words to describe is that I just don't think it's that simple of an issue. I think it's that I don't think it's a black and white thing. I think you can have when I phrase it the way that I do with like a well-meaning idiocy, I don't think it's trying to be, this thing. And as a result, I don't think it's trying to be conservative, but as a result, of that, there are smaller elements of it that are, definitely progressive and stuff like that. I like Osgood. And you pointed this out at the end last week. I like the whole metaphor with Osgood and the transgender debate and all that stuff. Again, just to reiterate what I said at the very end of last week's episode, we fucking get it, but it's 2015. You can just have those characters. You don't necessarily need to make them into sci-fi metaphors all the time. You can just do it. But that's a side note. For the real bit of this, for me, as somebody who's just deeply entrenched in Marvel comics and stuff like that, it's just always been part of my life. The Doctor here, he's Steve Rogers. He's Captain America. Yeah, he is this paragon of I'm going to Captain America. He steps up and he fights the Serpent Society. He stops people who are violently publicly coming up there and saying I'm going to I don't want these people who are different than me living here around me or near me. I'm going to fight them. I'm going to attack them and all this stuff. And then Captain America, Doctor Who, they both walk up into there and then they say, no, this is not going to happen. I'm going to fight on behalf of these people who I can see are being I can see them being oppressed and all this stuff, and I'm going to swoop in and I'm going to save the day. And then after it's all said and done, he also continues to represent be free, but just be quiet about it. By the end of this episode, we have the Doctor coming in here and saying okay, we understand that you feel oppressed. You're very clearly this metaphor for all these different things. You don't like the fact that you have to live in a world where nobody can't be free to be who you are, to look who you are in this world. But I need to sit here and explain to you that you don't get what you want, because that would just be too disruptive. So I need to come in here and I need to stop the violence. But I also need to make sure that you understand that I am correct in saying everything is fine the way it is. As long as nobody on either side steps out too out of line, the status quo is great, but the status quo is not great. It's not great in this episode. It's not great in real life.
I do feel the need to interrupt there because again, it does feel very strongly like you're equating what Bonnie wants with what all Zygons want. And again, we did see very clearly that one Zygon who Bonnie had, you know, removed the ability to take human form, before he killed himself, said, "All we want is to live in peace. We don't care. We just want to live here. We don't, you know, most of us don't care about, you know, appearing to be Zygon. We were happy the way things were until Truth or Consequences started, you know, screwing things up." I get the interpretation that you've affixed to the episode. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think that in the broader context of the story, I don't think that it's applicable.
I think to just kind of build on Steven's point for a second, maybe I interpreted wrong. I don't think it's just one Zygon. I feel like she was a leader of like a rebel faction of them. Now, whether or not that's, you know, 1,000, 10,000, or 1,000,000 of the 20,000,000, I think the point being made, and I would argue it's a valid counterpoint, is, you know, at the end of the episode, these were Zygons that should have been told or could have been told, hey, violence wasn't the way to go about this. Let's figure it out. Because their goal, you know, as for the most part, was to just be themselves, right? They didn't want to conform as humans anymore. They didn't want to be stuck, you know, shape-shifted into something they weren't. And, you know, I think the point Steven's trying to make here is that the Doctor's like, be quiet and conform because you don't know how good you have it. Now,
Bonnie had said, and I'm sorry to kind of step on you there, but Bonnie had said, the Doctor actively asked her, what do you want? And her answer was very plain and simple. It was war. It wasn't, we just want to be ourselves. I'm sure if it had been, we just want to be ourselves, they probably could have figured out a way to make that work. But that's not what Bonnie wanted. What Bonnie wanted was out and out war against the humans, which is why he then led to his next question, which was, then what? When your revolution wins, what comes next?
No, and he's 100, you're 100% right. He's 100% right about that. But the buildup to that was, you know, a faction of the society that was dissatisfied with hiding and everything like that. Yeah, she said war at the box moment at the end there. But it seemed up to that point that they didn't want to conform anymore. And it felt like that they thought, and it's very misguided, that war was the answer to that. And it's just very interesting that this was a case of, you got to keep the peace and go back to what you're doing, as opposed to the Doctor being like, okay, I have room in the TARDIS for all 500,000, 10,000 of you. Let's go figure out, you know, Zygella planet, you know, 2.0 or whatever. And it's kind of like what we talked about just a little bit last week, is that there was no win. Like, this was a no-win scenario, right? There was no way that either the humans or the Zygons, like, no side was going to get what they wanted. And it just seemed like that, for the purposes of the plot and everything, it kind of glossed over the fact that these guys were talked out of war, which is good, and talked into, you know, integrating back in and getting back to, you know, falling in line with what the original plan was in the first place, as opposed to being like, okay, you guys don't want to do this anymore. Let's figure something out.
Steven. And there are still 20 million Zygons living on Earth.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, apparently the majority of them peacefully, which is awesome. But it's just a very interesting kind of thread that's just kind of wrapped up very nicely, as opposed to, you know.
I think that the idea of, like, the Zygon who kills himself and everything like that, too, I think that's just, like, another misguided part of the metaphor. I think it's, like, very much, like, you can't really, like, extract this story out from the, like, very, of like very specific global politics that it, you know, addresses. And this idea, like, it felt to me like if you had replaced, like, all of these stuff with their actual counterparts or whatever, like, you know, if you had replaced the Zygons and put them in a story about, like, people, you know, Israelis, or about, you know, people from, you know, that part of the world, like, it would be, and then you had a white person, like, coming in here and writing this story and saying, like, oh, well, I bet this is what I think that most of these people probably want and what they probably desire, and I'm going to, like, tell my story accordingly. They probably just want to be completely, you know, they probably just want to be quiet and off doing their own thing and be just like us and everything like that. It's just these other troublemakers over here, you know, want something different and stuff like that. It's just such a bad metaphor and stuff like that. I don't necessarily think that it's intentional, but I think it wasn't well thought through or well researched, more or less. Like, I feel like this was a metaphor for, like, for real world people that were never asked like at any point in the like construction of this story that were like that though the people that were being represented here by this metaphor were never asked what they actually think or what they actually want or if this was a good idea to go forward with.
And I think I'm going to put that, you know, that's your perspective. And I will say to you, Stephen, and this is with all due respect, because I consider you a good friend and a very smart guy and somebody who is very knowledgeable in general. This is a UK show. You're not immersed in UK culture. You haven't been to Cardiff where they filmed Doctor Who, and the fact that there are Somali enclaves and there are Muslim enclaves and there are, you know, various other people who have basically who came to this country and still, you know, celebrate who they are, and they've come to the UK, but they have meshed in and they want to be in the UK to be a part of that and adapt everything, you know, adapt the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up in Luton, which is, you know, just a little bit north of London. And there's a part of town called Bury Park, which is kind of known for being largely made up of Indian and Pakistani immigrants. A lot of Muslims and Hindus and so on live in that area. And you go to that part of town, and it's just shops, and it's just people, and it's just living, and it's just people who want to get on with their lives. And they're not, you know, these are people who they just want to run their shops, they just want to do their shopping, they just want to get on in peace. They don't have any connection to the Taliban or to ISIS. They don't care. They just want to get on. They just want to be, you know, that. And there are a lot of other places like that all over the UK, in England, in Wales, in Scotland, in London. London is a boiling, a melting pot of people from different cultures and different backgrounds, in the same way that people think America is. It's all people who have come, they've come to the country for various different reasons, either to start a new life or to get away from something or to find work because there's nothing available for them in Poland, as an example. And it's just people who want to get on and exist and be. And they don't, you know, to them, the idea of, well, I've got to be me. I've got to be of my culture. That's not necessarily as important to people who are immigrating to the UK from these countries. They just want to live and they just want to get on. I don't necessarily think that that is an issue that doesn't affect people in America. And I don't necessarily think it's an issue that doesn't affect people who immigrate to the US. As an immigrant myself to the US, I've been living here now for 8 years, and I'm quite happy to get on. I don't like Marmite. I don't like soccer. I don't really drink tea. If I never saw another box of PG Tips for the rest of my life, I would be fine. I'm quite happy to get on and be here, you know? And I think
you're talking bobbins.
All right.
You on the PG Tips, I'm more Earl Grey, but let me throw out two examples to you. First one, my parents live in a small village called Ponta de Lais, which is west of Swansea. There's probably less than maybe 50,000 people living in the village, and there are a number of Polish immigrants moving into South Wales, and indeed Muslim immigrants. And I bring these up because, look, this is the analogy we're going to throw. You know, we've drawn the line between, you know, ISIS and Muslims and the Zygons. And I was talking to my mum a couple of weeks ago, and she was telling me, my parents live three doors down from a Welsh language school, because it is, you know, it's a language.
It's a language. Like the way you phrased that was pretty great. It's like, oh, you know, you might not know this, but you know, it qualifies.
It may look like a vague assortment of vowels and consonants shaken up in a Scrabble bag and strewn across the board, but it is in fact a proper language with its own syntax.
Not only that, Ben, it's the oldest language in Europe, predates Greek, and not only that, it means we win at Scrabble all the time.
That's right. Someone's got to use that wise.
Basically, because my mom worked as a school dinner lady, and, you know, she worked at the school, and she told me about the families that have come in who have taken their kids to the Welsh school because they don't want the, you know, the kids can speak English, but they want the kids to learn Welsh. And not only that, the parents are learning Welsh to be a part of the community. They're keeping, you know, they're obviously keeping, you know, their roots, and they celebrate all their, you know, their holidays and observe their religion and everything else, but they want to be a part of that. And that goes for a vast swath of immigrants into the UK. I mean, I'm like Ben. I came here almost 16 years ago. And, you know, I have my Britishisms. I have my Doctor Who. I have my, you know, get up and watch my footy and my rugby, and I have my chocolate supply and all that fun stuff.
Only till the end of March.
Well, hey, I've got a hookup. We'll talk later. But I, you know, I love this country for all its faults, and I am here. This is my home. I have married one of the locals, and she has made my life way better than
ever been.
So, you know, I mean, the majority want to be safe and want to live their lives, be a part of the community, no matter what that community is. And then let's go back to this, you know, I'm going to throw out a number with regards to ISIS. ISIS is 20,000 strong. Those are the figures. 20,000 Muslims are ISIS. That's 0.0001% of the Muslims on planet Earth. And these guys are fucking it up for everybody else. That's what this Zygon insurrection is. 0.001 of 20 million, and they're fucking it up for everybody else.
A quick Google search, by the way, for number of Muslims in the world brings up a number of 1.57 billion, which is 23% of the world population. 20,000 ISIS members is barely a drop in the water.
Well, pretty much what I said. Thank you for that.
Yeah. You're welcome. I just like to take what you said and then
you said it a different way, Ben.
I think that's the point. I think the BBC and Doctor Who and, you know, Moffat and their entire crew, which is obviously, you know, he's a jock based living in Wales, which is, you know, rough for him because their rugby team sucks balls. They have, and you know, if you go down to where the BBC studios are in the Bay, I mean, they're not far from all these various other enclaves, and I guarantee you there is a multiracial production team on Doctor Who. And I will go back and throw out the fact that the first ever director of Doctor Who happened to be a Sikh. Remember that?
Absolutely.
This is in play.
Rory Kinnear.
So I mean, it's difficult here. In America, everything's so spread out. In Los Angeles, everything is so spread out. I mean, you're in Fargo. I've never been to Fargo, but I can imagine it's very much
exactly like the TV show. Obviously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's, you know, that's just the way it is. But I would basically say, if you want to throw out an example, let's look at Dali. Dali is of Macedonian descent. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
I see your Facebook page. I see how you celebrate and love that Macedonian heritage, and you go to these events. But at the end of the day, it's not all that defines you. You Correct. Are also an American. Yep. You are also somebody who is so proud of living in Detroit. In fact, you're the only one who is proud of living in Detroit.
Someone's got to be.
I mean, this is what... You know, this is what Doctor Who says to me. This is what this episode says to me.
So if
we stop being dicks to each other, and, you know, it's almost like it could also be another analogy for the fucking internet, where you see people bitching and moaning and screaming because something doesn't adhere to their particular coda. That, you know, they have to be right. This is Gamergate. This is the... You know, the Marvel fanboys getting pissed off that Captain America is now a black man and Thor's a woman.
That comic is great, by the way. Sam Wilson's Captain America is fantastic.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, you know, and by the way, props to the Captain America shout out earlier. I thought it was actually really cool. So look, I know your comic book credentials, and I'm down with you. I feel you. But I think that thing, the Doctor is the best of us, and he won out this time. And I think as an
analogy... one of the things...
Go on.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just saying, as an analogy, I mean, this is the episode, or the two episodes, the story, if you will, that reinforces that the Doctor is the best of us. He takes an interest in this polluted little green and blue planet that's slowly drying up, unfortunately, but wants to make us better because he's seen what the cultural elitism, if you will, you know, did to Gallifrey, because they got corrupt. Mm-hmm. They got more, you know, inbred.
You don't just need to have seen how the Gallifreyans and how the Time Lords were presented in the End of Time. There's plenty of examples in Classic Who of the Time Lords being generally quite shit.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong. And I mean, and that's the thing. He's the one who's come and has seen it all happen before. And he has got this love for this planet and all the people on it. And he wants us to be the best of ourselves. And the best of ourselves are the people who move all around the world and integrate into local cultures. Don't forget where they've come from, but want to be a part of something new and different and are tolerant of everybody else. And that's what this two-part shows, that the militant little bastards don't win out. Bonnie doesn't win out. Bonnie comes around. And, you know, Lethbridge Stewart doesn't win out. She steps down. Because in an ideal world, that neoconservatism, that neo-fascism, the urge to bomb the shit out of everything, doesn't pay off. And that's the lesson. And that's the lesson that everybody should be taking out of this. Unfortunately, and this is not aimed at you, Stephen. This is aimed at the people who I've seen posting on the fucking blog sites. These are the people who don't venture outside their doors. They're the ones who think that this is a right-wing propaganda machine when they know fuck all about the world outside their driveway. And like I said, I'm not aiming that at you because I know you. Not as well as I'd like, because obviously we don't get to hang out and have beers and stuff, but I think I know you well enough to know that you are a very liberal bloke and you have a good sense of what's right and wrong. And, you know, that's what... You could be the Doctor.
don't worry, Marcus. You're actually the only beer I need, so it works out perfectly fine, too. If I get to be the Doctor...
This is a big boy. We will take time later.
Brilliant. So, you know, to kind of put a cap on this, we are running long, and this has been a phenomenal episode. But the fact that we've been able to have this conversation, though I may not agree 100% with Steven about the episode, I am thankful that he brought this up because being able to have this conversation.
Absolutely. Yes. No, absolutely. Look, Steven presents a point.
Being able to have this conversation, yes, definitely.
No, yeah, you present a point of view that's really interesting. And again, like I said, it might be generational, it might be based along national boundaries. And it's not meant as a slight on you because it gives a very interesting insight, I think, to myself and Ben, who, you know, we are Zygons.
Absolutely.
And we're caught, you know, we're here and we're masquerading or whatever you want to call it, but we love it here.
Yeah, when I hop on the metro, when I hop on the red line to go to LA Union or whatever, until I open my mouth, nobody knows that I'm British and nobody gives a shit. I'm just there. I'm on the metro just like everyone else, listening to my iPod and trying to pretend that no one else is in there and that mariachi band isn't trying to panhandle for money.
Well, look, let's make it plain. They do give a shit for one reason. You're a ginger.
Oh, yeah, this is great. But they give a shit for very different reasons than the British give a shit, which is that in England that you see a redhead and you want to, you know, bludgeon them to death with a rowing oar, whereas here it's a point of pride for me.
Well, here it's because South Park ruined it for everybody.
When I was in the UK, I saw a lady ginger. I just want to shag her. I love you.
Yeah.
maybe don't say that out loud.
He was hitting on you
when you're there. Oh yeah.
So we'll have to, and I have to cut you guys off. I'm gonna end with two points. One, this is fantastic that we're able to have this conversation about fucking Doctor Who. Well, not fucking Doctor Who, but about Doctor fucking Who.
Phrasing, Dolly.
About Basil Funkenheim.
Wait, who did he fuck? Sorry, fucking who?
Basil Funkenstein slash John Disco. Number two, I also just want to say that Marcus, for all you talk about integrating into the U.S., want to be here, you still talk about cricket and rugby. Stop it!
I never talk about cricket. You shut the fuck up about that. I don't talk about cricket. It's a goddamn stupid sport. It's basically a stupider version of baseball.
You know what he did? He heard you talking about rugby and assumed you were also talking about cricket because of the accent. Which, you know what? That's offensive.
Yeah, but this is it. One, it's racial profiling. Two, Dali being an NFL fan with the Detroit Lions, he hears rugby and realizes it is the superior sport. It's then bastardized into their version of egg ball. To change their knickers. Yeah. So, I mean, I understand where he's coming from because I see his tweets all the fucking time. But at the end of the day, rugby is the purest sport on the planet. And one day, my man, you will sit down with me and we will watch a fucking rugby match and drink a bottle of scotch and you will go, oh my God, the NFL can suck my asshole.
Well, let's review this episode. We'll each give out of five Osgood boxes, what would we rate this episode? Steven?
Give an episode and then a two-parter review.
That's fine. Yeah, that sounds good. Steven, episode and then the full two-parter.
Well, as you know, I work for a site called Ars Technica, and we don't do reviews over there, or we don't do review scores over there. So I'm just, you know, numbers, man. What do they even mean? I'm just going. Episode specifically,
fucking magnets.
How do they work? I don't know. For this episode specifically, I almost don't know if I want to give it a score. It's just because I'm so pulled in so many different directions. It's not just one or two. It's like, you know, it's all five points of the star right now. You know. Pulling me around, and I don't necessarily like. I think I would rather just kind of like let our conversation speak for itself to a lesser or greater degree, because I think, you know, for as much as I have problems with the episode, like it is fantastic that like there's an episode worth fucking talking about, you know, good or bad, whatever you feel about it. Like, this is the first time I've actually given enough of a shit about an episode of Doctor Who in the last season and a half to have these conversations with you guys, and it's great. And you know, if I'm rating that experience, it's a 5 out of 5 easily. If I'm rating the actual episode itself, which I just said I wasn't going to do, but I'm going to do it now anyway, it's like a 2 out of 5. There you go.
You are a walking continuity error. You are just.
We talked about comic books.
If the unit dating controversy could be given a human form, it would be you, Steven. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep, yep, there you go. I don't know what that is.
So you said 5 out of 5 out of the two-part arc, 2 out of 5
Don't you be rewriting history again, Demoski. We already had this conversation at the beginning of the episode.
Renegade Time Lord over there.
Yeah, that's the master.
Moffitting everything.
Mm-hmm. I rate like the good conversation with friends about Doctor Who is a 5 out of 5. The two-parter, I'll rate it as a 3 out of 5, because, you know, just right smack in the middle. Because again, like I think there are good elements. I think there are terrible elements, and the experience that it gave me is fantastic. So there you go,
Sean.
15 out of 15.
Yeah, there you go. Sean, what about you?
That's what works out to.
I'm so confused, Steven. I just, you're all over the place.
Oh, worry about yourself. I'll explain my thing.
You would confuse a Time Lord's brain.
Don't worry about Planet Express. Let me worry about blank.
So I think I came in at a 2 out of 5 last week. I feel like the speech really, I mean, even that by itself elevated the episode so much. And I don't think this week was as bad as last week's episode. And again, I don't say that because of the ideas, but more the execution and the plot and the just bizarre character decisions and choices. That said, I would probably give this week a 3.5, and then that would probably elevate the whole two-parter to a 3 out of 5 for me.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's good. Marcus, what about you? We'll save Ben for last, by the way.
Time is closing.
Maybe a 3.
That's my
Davros. How does that translate?
That's my Davros from the end of time. I give last week's a 5. This week I'm going to give it a 4.5 because, you know, Capaldi's speech, outstanding. Little bit wibbly, although I did call it on Lethbridge Stewart shooting the Zygon. I did nail that one.
Sure did.
Who shot overall, first?
I gotta give this 5 Zygons out of 5. Even though this episode was perhaps not as stellar as the week before, mm-hmm. It's, you know, as an overall two-part, I'll put it this way, if they released this episode as a one-part merged DVD, Blu-ray, I'd fucking buy it. And I didn't buy last season's Blu-ray collection. That's the first season of Doctor Who I have not bought on Blu-ray last season. So this one, uber thumbs up. This season, streaks ahead of last season's. Long may it continue.
I'm going to say 5 out of 5 for this week's episode because of the moment, the Doctor Capaldi arriving as a Doctor, and 5 out of 5 for both. Just fucking loved it.
Plus they mentioned the moment.
Yes,
they did.
They mentioned the moment.
My score is going to be the same as yours, Dali, but my outcome is going to be different. Now, I'm giving the episode 5 out of 5. I'm giving the two-part story as a whole a 5 out of 5. But that I would even go further as to say, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the conversation, but this has become my favorite two-parter since Doctor Who came back in 2005. And I think that people are going to be looking back on this two-parter in years to come as not just a watershed moment for Peter Capaldi and not just a watershed moment for Doctor Who since it came back, but as one of the best Doctor Who stories in its entire history. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And if they do a Fathom Events thing where they put it up on the big screen as a feature-length thing, I'm going to go and see it a bunch of times. I am, because it was just absolutely fantastic. It was marvelous. If they do that, Marcus, you and I, we're going to go together. We'll have a couple of beers. We'll point and laugh at the Zygons, and we'll make a night of it.
And the Zygons you're talking about is the ones that show up to the theater, not just the ones on the screen.
Yes, well, exactly.
For us, Zygons are code for Americans.
Yeah. Let me go through the comments from our wonderful listeners real quick before we run out of time here, and then we have to choose the winner from last week's contest. Chris Newnham, longtime listener, longtime tweeter, says, "Glad I left my comments until after the second half because that was a rather satisfying conclusion. Well worth the wait. I had no idea how it was going to end. The speech was incredible. Who hasn't hit me in the feels like that since Matt left?" Mustafa Ali Smail, who's at El Really Bored Pirate, writes, "A better conclusion to what I felt was a meh first part than I could ever dream of. The speech was fucking perfect. I cried." I felt that too. Mustafa, I felt that too. Kostich at Kostich Electronic Billboard, our friend, long time also, says, "Can Osgood be the new companion?" God, didn't even ask her, which was just perfect.
He asked, and Osgood said no.
Yep. I'm Mike Zero.
You just said the exact opposite.
Yeah, right. I'm Mike Zero says, "Brilliant follow up to last week's episode. Magic reset button didn't happen because it never truly existed. Genius. The Doctor's speech about the pain of war was phenomenal and a classic Doctor Who moment. Osgood is a perfect companion and it has to happen. I thought she was a Zygon due to not using the inhaler until the end." And then both use the inhaler. By the way, I think Moffat did mention that he believes there's more to Ingrid's story, Ingrid Oliver, the actress story, and he says she has to come back to Doctor Who. So
they've actually been pimping her a lot. She did a number of interviews with BBC in the build up to this season.
Okay, yes, she did.
Her again, and she is a ready made companion, especially if my theory of the 15 or the 14 other things happen in the future. That she is a ready made companion, somebody who would absolutely be awesome. And can we just say, give a shout out to her fucking wardrobe?
Yes.
Oh, marvelous.
Oh, loved it.
Also worth pointing out, Osgood also appeared in the most recent Big Finish audio series, Unit Extinction.
Yes, that is correct. Yep. We will, then we're going to get more Big Finish stuff. We didn't talk to this week, but we'll continue. At Sublevel 20, Anna Lee, our good friend, says, both Zygon episodes were brilliant. Excellent Who, and this week topped last. Capaldi a powerhouse, Ingrid as Osgood, war scenario and speech, wow, years of anguish, Bonnie, good stuff, and Marcus last week, spot on, RE war today. I don't always agree with Marcus on Lonely TARDIS, but last week's statement from him, dead fucking on point. Okay, yeah, we all know, we're all in love with Marcus. Fancy Manatee says,
"The truth, what can I say, although she does always agree with me, she knows."
Yeah, she does. Fancy Manatee, which is at MP Dorian, I don't know how to say it, says 15 times, that's one shady truce. Love the speech and the callback to the 50th. It was a satisfying conclusion. At Coeb E. Pinhead, which is Klaus Erig, says, liked it a lot better than last week. Capaldi's monologue was breathtaking. Those feels. Also, I have a crush on Osgood. I do as well. And I think I mentioned Alan Paxton. I don't know, but I'll say it again. He says, I'll say it again. Capaldi's performance was spot on. Passion during the Black Archive scene was evident and made me truly enjoy and embrace his version of the Doctor Moore moments like that for him to work with, and he will cement himself as one of the greats. Here's hoping he gets the opportunity before the BBC ruin the show with their constant interfering. And finally, at Kostich again writes, I liked it the 15 times before reference was not lost on me. Want to watch the episode again. I think we all do. And with that, we have our prize draw. Oh, sorry, go ahead. Would you say something, Sean? Seanus?
No, I just whispered that I don't want to watch it again. Keep doing your thing.
All right, I'm going to run the – we had 10 entrants that met our qualifications of must be in the U.S., must follow, and retweet our tweet from last week. By the way, next week I believe we will have another contest. Be ready. The winner, so I'm using random.org. This is happening live on the air right now. The winner out of 10. Result is 5, so I'm going to go read the fifth person that – it is at Portia Camille wins this prize pack. Congratulations. I will be sending you. You are the first winner of anything Doctor Who related on the Lonely TARDIS. Wonderful.
Can I have the name of the show there for a second?
What's that?
Dolly, I'm giving something away.
Marcus, you're going to give something away.
I'm going to give some. A while ago, I spent some money on thinkgeek.com, and I got one of those Doctor Who TARDIS door, transfer-y type things that basically turns your door into a TARDIS. Unfortunately, it's too damn big for my door.
That's the worst.
This is almost $100 value. So I am going to give this away. I am going to, and I'm going to pose the question, and you got to basically respond to me and CC at Lonely TARDIS. Mm-hmm. And the question is as follows, and this is for hardcore Whovians only.
All right, I got to hang up the call real quick, if it's for hardcore Whovians only. I should get out of here.
Well, you weren't even born, Stephen. What is your favorite Baker Tom episode? And why, in less than 100 characters, one entry, boom. U.S. only because I'm too tight to pay for shipping overseas. And plus, I sent Stephen a copy of Fallout 4, and I'm totally broke now. I am going to finally give this away. It's been sitting in my house for almost a year. I can't use it. It's basically something you put over your door, and it turns it into TARDIS.
That sounds amazing. Sounds amazing.
It does sound cool.
You have to be following Lonely TARDIS, and I'll fucking check. And if you know, come back, and the best answer from, basically, what is your favorite Tom Baker episode? The right answer, or the best answer, will win this, and I will ship this off to you in the after next week.
So make sure you must be lit. The only way you're gonna find out about that question is to listen to this podcast. So make sure that you're listening to this podcast and you actually send that question.
Hey, if you weren't listening to this podcast to hear this message, make sure that you're listening to this podcast.
Even know why I said that. I don't know. Yep.
I think the point you should make is if you're listening to this podcast and your brain hasn't melted.
Yes, exactly.
We've made it this far in intact. Congratulations.
One of our best episodes ever. I mean, this is up there with the Susan episodes.
Ben, thank you so much for joining us. We will definitely have to have you back on. It's been phenomenal.
I had a great time. I'd love to come back.
Yes, I'm smarter. I'm more smart now just listening to you guys, so I feel mighty inadequate.
What's the word you used earlier, Ben?
Huh?
What's that word you used earlier?
Oh, I may have used the word acquiesce.
Acquiesce. I would write that down if I knew how to spell it.
I've actually drunk a third of a bottle of scotch while we've been doing this podcast.
Beautiful.
It's been a long day for me.
Ben, where can we find you?
You can find me all over the place. Presently, I write, produce, and star in a science fiction comedy audio play series that we are releasing as a free monthly podcast called Jump Leads. You can find that at jump-leads.com/audio, and the new episode should be going up in the next few days.
Excellent. Ben, tell them about the candy one.
I also occasionally, I haven't done it in a while, but I'm hoping to get back into it soon. I do a candy review vlog called British Candy Authority, where I eat American candy bars and sweets and treats and chocolates and outline its shortcomings. You can find that on YouTube by just searching for British Candy Authority, or new episodes will be going up on youtube.com/chainsawsuitoriginal very soon.
Nice. And I'm still waiting for my damn invite because I eat more candy than anything.
Yes, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. We'll have to talk, not tonight, but at some point very soon, we'll have to talk about doing the show together.
Yes.
Beautiful. Marcus, where can we find you?
You can find me at Annoyed Gamer. You can also find me at my podcast that's now 1 month old, which is It's Cast. And today I put up a 45-minute Fallout 4 extravaganza. It's totally spoiler-free, and I basically talk about what I think of Fallout 4. And that's the reason I haven't talked about Doctor Who LEGO Dimensions today. By next week,
yes. I'll
be talking about it. Because it's the Doctor, it's the TARDIS, and it's fucking K9, and I am so down with that.
All right. Sean, where can we find you? If you're still awake.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm here. I just don't know how to follow a comedian. I know. Whatever Marcus is. Candy Caster. Normally Behind the Shadows, but you can find me on Twitter at SHAUNNORTON. Been interacting with some fans. It's been a lot of fun.
He will DM you with pitches for his new games.
There you go. There you go. You can find me at Dolly Domovsky. That's all. And where can we find you, Steven?
You can find me so many different places. It's ridiculous. as of today, you can add one more to the list, which currently includes, before now, it included Dorkly, where I do different pop culture write-ups and stuff like that. I work at Ars Technica, where I do video game reviews. I am on the Twitter sphere, where I talk to you about why I don't like all the things that you really like. But as of today, I am also going to be writing news for IGN.
Really?
Not in any crazy. I'm not an editor or anything like that, but I will be doing some news stuff for them in the future here. So
congratulations.
Maybe more features and things as well. So
rock and roll. Always great to hear our team constantly taking over the internet. And you can find
sorting out their Doctor Who coverage because
there you go.
I'll have a word with the boss man. That's what I call him. Good old boss man.
You can find us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter. Please rate and review us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Zune, wherever you're listening to us, Lonely TARDIS Podcast. And visit LonelyTARDIS.com. All of this helps. Always reply, retweet, send us love, send us hate, send us money. We're thankful for that too. Yes. Thank you, everybody, again. Phenomenal episode.
Dali, it's great that we get the big finish. The big finish of really reached out to us.
Yes.
But let's talk about some Doctor Who merchandising. Let's talk to BBC America and BBC Worldwide for a second, because you know what? We love Doctor Who.
Yeah.
BBC America and BBC Worldwide. Together, because I just got the latest BBC America catalog, and Doctor Who section is piss poor. Look at the amount of licensed stuff you find on ThinkGeek and on various other websites. There's some cool ass stuff there, and I think we need to move into want to review this stuff. We want to talk about it.
I love it.
You guys need to outreach to us because We will talk. I mean, I know Ben has a huge collection of Who stuff.
Oh, I my collection of Who stuff is preposterous, but it's almost entirely imported.
Well,
I'm writing down the word preposterous for use from now on, is to acquiesce and preposterous.
You know the Davros and Daleks voices you heard. I got them from fucking Tesco's.
Marvelous.
They are toys I got from Tesco's years ago and then brought back to the US. But I mean, there is an amazing plethora. There you go. That's the first.
Good job.
There's a plethora of amazing Doctor Who merchandising out there that we need to be talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we need to go above and beyond what's in the BBC catalog, because the BBC catalog is kind of limited. So if there are companies out there who do have something cool, I'm talking about ThinkGeek, I'm talking about obviously Doctor Who Lego, you need to
get... Are you a licensed manufacturer of Doctor Who merchandise? Then get in touch with the Lonely TARDIS and we'll review your tat.
I gotta cut that out as a separate piece and put it in several bumpers throughout the show.
I am available for voiceover work if needed.
That is a meme with a picture of all of us with our shades on.
Yes, there you go.
And that audio. I told you Ben would be fucking useful for something.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Someone thinks I'm useful.
Yeah, there you go. Well, again, thank everybody. Ben, again, thank you so much. And I'm going to say again anytime. One more time, listen to us, rate, review us, blah, 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 blah. Steven and Sean, take us out.
You can make sure that you stick in or that you come back next week when you will hear us use the word quiescent.
Love it.
Sounds vaguely sexual. I love it.
Quiescent. Q-U-E-I.
I think you wanted us to do the theme, but I'm glad that you...
Oh, yeah, no, you know, as long as we're, you know, we're keeping a theme this week. I've also kept a theme this whole season of just, like, not ever doing the exact thing that Dally wants me to do in every episode.
Let's say something else. Next week, we'll be full of testicular fortitude.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, bye.
That sounds very lascivious.
Bye.
Woo.
Erudite. Woo.
Ooh.